The GA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
Welcome along to the GER. This is the Hurling Show on a Monday with JJ and Michael, in association with Paddy Power. And there's only one place to start here, lads. The big controversy from yesterday, and that is the sending off, the Reedy and Condon sending off. So we'll all agree Condon deserved to be sent off. That goes without saying.
Can't even defend. You won't even try and defend him.
What was he thinking? Like, I mean, I know, like, maybe he didn't mean to get him in the balls, because that was a really dirty thing to do. Yeah. But what was he doing anyways?
I'd say he just hard man stuff. Turned around, he seen Dermot Burns on the ground. Maybe he thought that he got the same thing that Tom Condon dished out.
Exactly.
That's the only way, the only kind of small bit of...
But there's no excuse even if he thought that. And no, he didn't see it. But even if he thought
that,
you were just getting yourself sent off anyways. Yeah. Like, it's madness. Why would you do it? Like, it's just so...
For an experienced fella too.
Yeah.
And he's only getting back on the team there as well, you know what I mean? But... Look, it's not the first time we've seen this for this Limerick team as well. Aaron Gillan done it against Cork there as well. So is there an issue with discipline or something there? It's something they're going to have to look at, you know, that kind of way, because it was mind-blowing what he done, you know what I mean? He was just very, very lucky that they really got sent off straight away on the same instance, and he got sent off for absolutely nothing, but it was down to 14 men either side, so he's very lucky that the Clare guy got sent off there as well.
Yeah,
it's the thing of the past, Woolly, because like them young lads would have grown up watching, say, Colin Lynch and Tony Brown, remember before the throw-in, back in the day you were allowed giving them 6 inches and nothing was ever done. It was like a giving in a hurling match. You're going to give and take, and like, it's just, that's out of the game now. No one gets away with it, and you've seen, as JJ said a few times, the Limerick lads have done this, and it's a straight red, and it's an easy red for the ref. There's no argument from the players, so I just don't see why it's in their game.
But like, this wasn't even, you know, the butt where you go, you're both standing and you're butting each other.
Yeah.
But he kind of just pushed this off into his belly. It was on a different level to a normal kind of give him the butt of the hurl.
I'm hoping it was unintentional. I don't think anyone would do that in the pitch. I think it was just Dave Ridley's maybe a bit of a smaller statue of a man. Just a mistake, hopefully.
So we're all agreed on the Condon thing. So then explain how Reedy got sent off, because, like, I mean, Burns is a big fella, and did he dive? Did he not expect it? Did he, like, I mean, sometimes an elbow at the very top of the stomach can slightly catch off guard and whinge when you're not expecting the contact. And he went down. He's a great actor if he dives. He went down straight away. Like, I mean, and another thing, what benefit was there of diving there?
Yeah, I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt, because, like, when you're in front of your own square and there's no one within 30 yards away, you're not going to go down unless you're in a
Why would he go down?
Yeah. Because you're leaving yourself too open for a goal. And you could see Reedy was waving his hands like a lunatic to get the ball in.
And if Reedy had done something dirty there, he wouldn't have been jumping up and down like a lunatic.
Absolutely not.
You know?
No, and the umpires weren't flagging at this stage. So if they were going to send them off after having a chat with the ref, why weren't they waving their flags at the time of the incident?
Yeah.
So unless they think he gave a belt after that, which I don't think he did, I don't know what that conversation was about with the ref, because he looked hesitant as well. When you're watching it on telly, he was saying Reedy to the umpire, like, do you want me to send them off? So I don't think he wanted to, but whatever the umpire said, he had no choice, obviously.
Yeah. But you can guarantee if Tom Connor didn't come in and hit David
Reedy, nothing happens.
And then we got both.
Exactly.
Why does he get sent off?
Yeah. Exactly.
Because that was after the action, like.
Mm.
So he was just sending one off to send the other person off. So one each side, no one can say that to me and send off.
Yeah.
Now maybe he got when he went into the out with the umpire, and the umpire said, look, this is what started it all off. But like, again, as what you're saying, like, he didn't react. The umpire didn't react when it happened straight away. So why should he be sent off? It was just reactionary, because Condon came in, hit him a dig, he got a dig and got sent off.
You're seeing referees even things up all their lives, really, in games.
Exactly.
But, like, I mean, that was just what it was. But so are we saying Burns didn't dive?
I can't understand why he would dive.
Yeah.
What benefit was he? Because, again, we're 6 yards out. Like,
yeah.
He left him on his own. Just seen the tweet by Jackie there last night. Jackie Turner saying, if you've half a leg and you're one-on-one within the 6 yard box, you still don't go down.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense. If he was trying to get him sent off or whatever, trying to win a free, but it was a dodgy thing to do. Now if you're trying that now, I wouldn't be recommending
and
the manager
so
telling
far
to
off
people
the ball. It wasn't a referee. It wasn't even with on eye line. It was because it was a long range point.
Yeah.
It was a bit, there's no way he could have gone down there. It was have been just made no sense.
And if you're blindsided with it as a run, it might knock the wind out of you. But they were barely even a jog when they hit each other. Like so,
they didn't see each other coming. That's
no,
the only
that
thing
was the problem
with it. Yeah. Maybe like again, you're giving him benefit of doubt here. Yeah. So he's a big guy as well. Like you know,
and
what
he's
mean?
No prior history going down easy. Either,
no.
So that's why we're giving him
the hurling
benefit
snobs
of
won't admit that diving is an issue within their game.
No way.
They're trying to push this one.
Be lynched.
Leave that in football.
Claire, another thing that. Like I didn't really hear this. This was going on Twitter because I watched it in a hotel bar and I had to leave after 60 minutes because to get up to the Connacht final. And RTÉ gave no updates on the Cork Waterford game. Like, I mean, there was nothing said by RTÉ. Not like, I mean, I would have thought a split screen would have come up. Do you know what I mean? And show
the
you a bit of action and
like,
the vital scores. Because the other was down to the wire.
Yeah.
This was because Limerick. Claire, we'll talk about this in part two, wasn't the most exciting game you'd ever watch, but the excitement was around the fact that Cork could be out if they lose. They needed 1-3 at the end to win by 3, was it, or 4, whatever. And like, not even a dicky bird. The commentator didn't even give an update on the score in Cork.
No, I think like JJ be happy with this with Sky, you know, they have the means. But like, RTÉ have the means to do it.
I'm
you know?
Setting JJ
up exactly.
Yeah.
They have the means to do it, but they don't.
Already,
you know, I just RTÉ's coverage has been pretty poor, I think. Like, you know, there's only 2 hurling games on. There's no reason why they couldn't have given an update throughout the game or showed a few clips or even spoken about it, and there was nothing. So viewers had to wait till Sunday game to find out anything, you know. And I just think it's very poor
like
on their behalf.
I was checking Twitter to try and the coverage wasn't great to try and find out what's happening in Cork Waterford, whereas like
you never get scores on Twitter anyway. When you go looking for scores, you never get it
while you're out.
There's always comments there, but you never get the score.
You have to, I actually just put in Cork and Waterford into a search. Exactly. Like, that's the only way to do it. But the like for example, when Air Sport have the league games right on a Saturday night, and there's a double game. The minute there's a goal in the other game, they're flashing that up, and you're seeing that on the other screen.
Yeah.
Like, was this not the perfect opportunity for RTÉ to have done this with 2 games, deciding who got into the Munster final at the same time? Showed a bloody action in both of them, pretty much.
They showed a couple of clips at half time and full time, but again, during the match itself, you didn't know what was going on unless you go check it yourself as well. Like, but obviously, the decision what they made, you know.
So. Yeah. Okay, right. I'll let you off the hook there, JJ. It's obviously the decision.
Move on, Willie.
It's obviously the decision that they made.
Splinters there everywhere.
Right. So here's a stat for you. Right. So of the teams that played 4 games in a row, right, in their first half they were +8 points. In the second half they were -31. Isn't that unreal?
Crazy.
Like, I mean, that's crazy. And I know there's been talk about this next year and given an extra week, and I guess what GA official was saying this, I can't remember exactly, but he's like, well, it'll come next year and there'll be problems that someone will have played 3 and the other 2. And I was like, yes, maybe, but that's an awful lot better than playing 4 in a row and the other after getting a break. So like, I mean, if an extra week can fix it a little bit, obviously there'll be some complaints, but like, sure, managers can live with 3 in a row versus 2 in a row much easier than 4 in a row.
100%.
You know, coming after the break.
It's the clear thing that's come out of this championship. Like, everyone has loved it. There's been great matches throughout the championship, but they need a break. So it has to be the 2-3 or 2-2 next year. I don't know how the powers to be could argue this point, because it's shown clearly in the games.
Yeah.
They have the stats to prove it.
Yeah.
So next year, it has to be done.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and there's better quality games then as well.
Yeah.
Really, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so
yeah,
it,
yeah.
They're going to benefit from it as well, that the games are going to be of a higher standard in both halves throughout the games.
Exactly. So, no, that makes perfect sense.
Unless
even from their own point of view, you can't have good teams fading. Like, I mean, that's just fading through fatigue. Like, there's no, that's not even up for debate based on how all these teams have done.
And even just kind of player burnout and player welfare and all this kind of stuff. You know, you get a niggle injury or this and you pull a hamstring or something like that, or a muscle injury, and then you could be gone. You could lose your place for the rest of the year then as well. Like, you know, it's just for small little niggles, like, players will always play, no matter if they're playing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they'll always make themselves available for them. Are they always 100% fit? You're 90% of the time you won't be, you know, that kind of way. You have always niggles. But if you had 1 week and you know that week, a break week is coming up, you can take that weekend off training and then get yourself ready.
Yeah, that fixes a lot.
It's just more economical for even managers. And then if you have managers that are playing off a pool of players for, if you only trust 20 guys on their panel that will actually go out and play there as well. So you're making sure that 20 guys are okay and get back out again, because again, we've seen if you lose one game in this particular championship, you could be blown out of the water. You've seen that with Tip, they drew two, they're gone now, you know, that kind of way. So even Waterford alone, so again, Waterford are a proven point that in regard to injuries, it just kind of catches, it has to catch you, you know, like, yeah, anyway, they got a very, very bad run of injuries, but it's still, if they had a week in between, that could, or we don't know, but again, it's a case of you'd rather see them having that week break, weekend break, and then try and get them ready for the championship then again. Like,
yeah, so it is, it's just too important. It is. It's injuries, it's fatigue in your legs, and it's dead legs, and it's rolled ankles that aren't that bad. Yeah.
Small little things.
You take the Tuesday, Thursday off, and that'll be back to normal. Yeah, but
difference.
If you don't, you're always playing catch up on it, and you never get it right, and you're never 100% then, you know. Yeah,
absolutely, so, absolutely.
Yeah, no, I think they will change that. I think it was, could have been Michael Brennan that was saying that, that was reading. Anyways, Brick Walsh, lads. Derek McGrath said after the game, I think Brick is done, lads, because he went in off the field yesterday and he came back out and he signed autographs for ages with his missus and the young child as well. And that's the kind of thing you do when you're maybe done. He's broken the record, which maybe, like, I know he's not into individual accolades, but it's probably nice to have that. It'll be a while before that's beaten. Like, I mean, what's the record? What did Henry have? Oh, was it Brendan Cummins
that he
beat.
73.
Yeah, 73. So, you don't know. How many did you have? Do you even know?
Couldn't tell you.
Doesn't even know. You're a lot more than me and Michael.
It was the 70s, I think.
So, but, like, if you don't have anyone off that kind of, you know, period up there, like, I mean, suppose he just won Leinster and got, he went the front door a lot of years.
Three
then.
Games there.
I probably have more. Yeah.
Winning All Ireland in four games.
Exactly,
would you have won an All Ireland with four games?
Yeah.
Leinster semi final. Leinster final.
Semi final. Yeah.
Right.
Final then, yeah.
Four games.
Yeah.
Jesus, I might have played more than that somewhere. Fairy tale stuff. So Derek McGrath said he's the best team player that has ever wore the Waterford jersey, and it's very hard to argue against that.
Yeah, well, even looking at Waterford and the injuries they have, he didn't have any. Like, I think the Irish Times had 51 consecutive games out of 74. That's an incredible achievement. Like, and he's not someone that stands back from tackles either, will he? Like, he's in the mix. He's always putting his hand up, and like, he's like the bionic man. Like, I don't think he would have went down the full back line against David Reid, you know, no matter what was wrong with him. But he's just that sort of player, and he's inspirational, and he's played all over the pitch and excelled there. So, like, he could, if he wanted to play next year, maybe not as strong a part, a bit part, and more of a leader in the dressing room, but like, he could go back next year. But I don't think, even the way Derek McGrath was speaking about him, and as he said, he was back out on the pitch after, I don't think he'll be back out next year. I think, like, that was his last hurrah yesterday.
Yeah, maybe. What do you think, JJ? You must have dealings with him, like, you would.
Yeah, I heard
him
down in WIT and Fitzgibbon teams there as well. So you kind of got first hand of how he trains, really, more than that. And he was just kind of, you sit back, you look at him, Jesus, this is the standard, you know, the way he was setting it back then. He was just a phenomenal player, but again, as what they're a team player, you get the ball, always do the right thing with it. Doesn't matter if he ever scored, he didn't ever care at all. Once he was doing the best thing for the team, he was one of our vital players in Fitzgibbon. We won a couple of Fitzgibbons with him. He was in midfield.
And
he was just everywhere. It was cornerback.
Cornerback?
Yeah.
Jesus. Who was that manager?
I was getting slow.
What was he thinking?
I was wintering well back then.
It's a good time down the water.
She's in the corner.
Yeah, phenomenal player. But another thing you have to say about him as well, like, he's won 10 football championships with his club. So that means he was hurling all year inter-county and then playing football for all the winter as well.
Yeah.
That's no break for 10 or 12, 13 years, and he still has that appetite to come back and back and back. He's just a phenomenal player, but he was kind of, met him there in Walford there last year, met him during the summer. I met him, Jesus, how are you staying going? I said, I still don't have that medal. That was his still motivation. That was huge. It just struck me there, and he kind of said, right, you might take it around to the small bit, but he just said straight out, I don't have that medal. So whether that burning desire will be there to come back again, it'll depend on the management team and who comes in. If Derek stays on, will Brick stay on there again with him just for another last hurrah? I don't know, you know what I mean? Or who comes in? That'll probably, I think he just needs to take a bit of time now, and maybe he has a decision made in his own head as well. I knew for a fact then, when I finished up in 2014, I was the last person to go off the field in Croke Park that day, because I knew it was finished. Maybe he'd done something like that there yesterday as well. He just wanted to look
it
around
like
there
that,
and
it?
Soak it in there.
Take
and seen him
in, yeah.
Walking in, it's a great picture of himself and one of the kids walking in hand by hand in Understandably Stadium, and that's a great picture he'll have if he does retire. That'll be a great picture he'll have as well. But it's just, I knew it was finished, and I just wanted to take the whole thing in the last time you walk off. And maybe he'd done that the same thing as well, because that's what you said, he's not really in the limelight and doesn't want it, doesn't, he's not happy with it, but he went back out there and just appreciate the water fans. We want to appreciate him. He just went back. I'd say Derek Rowe didn't tell him to go back out again. Yeah. His dad's not a sort of fella. He wouldn't want that limelight, but he went back out there and he signed autographs there. There's a great picture there as well. I think I seen on Twitter yesterday.
It's a great one, yeah.
He was just surrounded, even bought there was Waterford
there
and
was,
Cork fans
and
as
Cork.
Well. It was brilliant.
It was a beautiful thing to see. Yeah. And it was actually Dan Shanahan saying that, yeah, he was never injured. But that's not luck. That's because of how he looked after his body and how he prepared and how he trained and how he bloody stretched and how he did the recovery. And like, I mean, you can complain a little bit about getting injured and sometimes you can be unlucky, but a lot of it, when I look back at some of my injuries, did I stretch well? Yeah. Like, I even remember last week after pulling my calf, I didn't stretch. You know what I mean? I'm not comparing
you're
me
old,
40,
yeah.
year, 40 yeah, years yeah. But you get me? Like, if you, lot of your injuries, are you really preparing the way you should have prepared?
If you're honest with yourself.
You're honest with yourself. Yeah, you know that, Carl? Did I do the rolling thing instead of just watching the telly? Did I do that? You can feel guilty.
All the hard things
and it
to
could
do,
have though. It could have happened anyway, but you never know when you didn't do that. So then you'll blame Jesus, you know.
Well, everyone who speaks about him speaks about how professional he is as a player and athlete and on and off the pitch, how much of a gentleman he is. And also, he's probably playing with injuries. You know, you see young lads these days and they get a little knock and they're off. And I'd say many a time Brick was out there with injuries that none of us knew about. And it's just he's a solid man, you know. Like,
The millennials, all these snowflakes are coming in now. Coming into hurling now. Injured all the time. Can't take a good bit of a hurling. Sure,
Going down too easy, aren't
they? Not even a good...
We'd be snooker these days.
A good butt into the ribs. They can't handle
it. You can't take it anymore.
One quick one Dan said is that he always leaves training after curling a ball over the bar at the end of a session and heads up the tunnel to the dressing room happy. So that's how Brick finished every training session. He'd whack one over the bar and he'd just stroll on up to the dressing room.
And I didn't
room.
Know
so
that Brick
was
flick
nice
was a thing as well. When you're playing against him, he forever does it. And it's so hard to stop because he throws the ball out in front and you just can't get a hold or a hand to him. But I didn't realise that they're training kids now.
Did you hear that? Did you watch the game?
I hadn't heard this before, like outside of that. But obviously it's a thing now around Munster.
Had you heard the Brick flick before?
No, I knew he'd done it alright now, but I never
you
knew
didn't
it.
Know
it you're
actually,
coaching the kids to do it, you know. That's brilliant. Imagine
it is
being named after you.
Brick, if it wasn't named after him, it is after last night anyway. So he's got the Brick flick. Fantastic. Well done to the Brick lads. Anyways, we're going to have to leave it there because we have Cork manager John Myler waiting on the line. John, you have 2 wins and 2 draws. You're unbeaten in the Munster League and you're in the Munster final, so that's not a bad place to be.
No, that's a good place to be now this morning. Our first objective really was to be one of the 3 that would qualify out of the group in a fierce competitive group where you had the 5 Munster hurling teams really, and it was really, really competitive. So our first objective was to be one of the 3, and then our second objective was to qualify for the Munster final. So that's where we are this morning, and we're delighted to be there.
Yeah, it was a difficult game to prepare for yesterday, considering Limerick were favourites to beat Clare. So if Limerick had won that game like the bookies thought they would, you could actually lose to Waterford and still get through to the Munster final. So like, I'm sure it was a strange one inside your dressing room.
Yeah, it was difficult all week to prepare because we knew that we had qualified as at least the third base team to come out of the Munster group. And, you know, the focus, you know, could have been partly on Limerick versus Clare. If Limerick were to win, well, we were in the Munster final. If Clare were to win, well, we would have to win. So it was difficult like that. And, you know, Waterford just had pride to play for. They had no more competitive games after that. So, look, it was difficult, but we just got over the line and we got the job done. So it's now preparation for Clare in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, exactly. And so what was it like in the second half of the game against Waterford? Were you getting word from Clare? Did you have someone in your backroom team there, or what way was that working?
No, there was no mention of the match in Innes. Really, like, we had focused on ourselves, and that's what we've done all year. So we just focused on ourselves and winning the match, and you know, that's what we've done in the last 10 minutes. And you know, it was very jumpy during the second half. There was a strong breeze blowing down the field into the town end. So, you know, conditions were okay. The pitch was very good, but, you know, strong wind. And you know, in fairness to Waterford, they rallied and they got a goal. You know, they were a few points up, then we levelled, and then they rallied and got a goal, big goal. And, you know, Seamus Harnedy got a fantastic goal to level it. And then we drove on with 4 points, really, in the last 10 minutes. So, look, it's lessons to be learned out of it, and just get ready now for Clare.
Yeah,
it's going to be extremely hard, competitive.
Yeah, I'm sure it will be. But like, I mean, you must be delighted with that character, because it's not only the 10 minutes against Waterford. Like, I mean, when Tipperary came straight back at you and got it back to level and it looked like they were going to finish it out, you came back and scored 3 in a row. So it's not the first time your team has shown a right bit of mettle.
No, but we don't want to be going to the well every week, and it gives you nerves on the sideline. But like, there's great character in this team. Harnedy stepped up as captain, got a great goal, and then Horgan stepped in, got a couple of points, or Shane Kingston, you know, so different people are delivering at different stages in different matches, and that's fantastic for us as management. And Conor O'Sullivan came on yesterday, Michael Cahillan, Jack O'Connor played really well, so you know, the depth of the squad is there, and you know, we've a few guys back next week now from injury, so please God, all those things come together in the final.
You must be delighted with the way the style of hurling the team is playing, because obviously, like, they played really well last year, and you're coming in as a new manager, and maybe the temptation might be to change things around a little bit, but it's like you've taken on from where you were last year, and like, some of the skillful passes and the style of play, like, I mean, you must be just sitting back looking at these fellas going, Jesus.
Yeah, look, it's nice to look at, but sometimes when it breaks down, you know what I mean, you say, what do we do? You pull the hair out of your head, and then guys are saying to you, look, forget about the short game, go long and that. But
yeah,
look, every team has its strengths, every team has its weaknesses, and really what you're trying to do is maximise those strengths, and that's really even our strength is movement, speed, skill, and that's what we need to maximise. You know, just cut out the errors, the unforced errors. You know, we gave a couple of scores to Waterford yesterday, you know, silly hand passes to a Waterford player, whatever, but the modern game has gone so quick, so fast now that, you know, a mistake is gone over the bar really in 2 seconds. So, you know, it's just that you have to be able to respond to changes in the match. When you go up, you go down, you know, you need to keep going. And one of my selectors yesterday, Don Lomani, was saying that, you know, composure, and 'twas really what we showed in the end. And you know, and he was stressing the importance of that there in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, and like, I mean, talking about pulling your hair out, watching it, like, I mean, because, like, I mean, it is high risk, but when you're kind of committed to that system, do you almost take it as a given that there are going to be some, you know, misread passes and these things are going to happen, and not to let your heads drop when that happens?
Yeah, but you know what I mean, like, all the four other teams in Munster, Clare, Tip, Limerick and Waterford, they're extremely competitive. There's a puck of the ball between 5 teams there in Munster. So, like, they've outstanding individuals, outstanding talent. They're going to put pressure on Nash's puck outs, and, you know, they're going to put pressure on back clearances in the back. They are going to intercept. But it's how you respond to that, how you reply to that, that's key. And that's character and that's attitude. And, you know, I think the lads have shown that over the last 4 games in Munster.
Yeah, do you have to keep evolving Nash's puckouts? Because this year, all teams against you seem to be kind of halving between the lines and cutting down that space in between the lines that Nash likes to hit.
Yeah, but look, Nash is possibly the best keeper at the moment in hurling. And, you know, he's like a quarterback, really, in the NFL. And, you know, his puckouts are incredibly on the button. And, you know what I mean? It's up to Nash to come up with ways, because he has the ball and we can do whatever tactics we want, but it's Nash really drives that. And, you know what I mean, the plays that he goes through, the puck outs he goes through, the short, medium and long ones, and, you know, it's Nash has the ball in his hand in Turles facing into the sun, or, you know, with a breeze behind him, because he has to make the right decision, you know what I mean, and 99% of the time he does, and there's a great credit due to Nash for that. And, you know, that's where it starts for us, really.
Right, so okay, so Nash kind of fills it in lads out the field where he wants them to go, and he's just trying, the movement's good and he's hitting them.
Yeah, but so he has to hit them as well, like, so it's extremely complicated at times, and it's extremely simple. All I say to him is puck the ball up, but make sure you puck it to a cock man. I don't like pucking it to a Clare man or a Waterford man, and that's really it. And, you know, he has been outstanding in that. And, you know, it's when to go long, it's when to go short, and, you know, you need to keep the opposition guessing, really.
Well, that's the thing, because I think it was on the Sunday game, there was one of the puckouts that was highlighted this year, and it was a really long one. It's one, hadn't really seen it before, and I think Patrick Horgan got out of the corner and Seamus Harnedy ran into that corner and it went in over his head and he got on it. So, like, I mean, is this the level that Nash is talking to these lads, you know, and the kind of innovation that he's coming up with?
But you have to be innovative now. You have to be creative, because the game is so fluid, the game is so flexible. So it's Nash deserves great credit for that.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? That he has to work with his backs and he has to work with his forwards. And you know that we don't have really 6 foot six guys that can just, you poke a ball out and they'll catch it in the air. So you know we have to be fluid with that, and in fairness to him, he has been excellent there for the last few years.
Yeah, I actually thought you were going to change Cork's style, because Dermot O'Sullivan was on the podcast earlier in the year and he said something like, he didn't go into it, but he said he would have a different hurling philosophy to you. So I didn't really get into it with him, so I'll get into it with you. What did he mean by that? Because you seem to have taken on the style from last year.
Yeah, but the strengths that we have, the strengths that any team have, you have to maximise those. And when you have the likes of Fitzgibbon, Shane Kingston, Luke Mead, you know, Mark Coleman, you must play to their strengths. Then couple that with Hoggy and Lehan and those guys and Nash and Gold. So it's the same here, and you know, Tony Kelly, Conlon, Galvin, those. Like, you have to maximise your strengths with those. You play the game built around the individuals that are in the team, and that's the way we need to play. And you know, I would have been foolish and stupid to change the style that we played from last year. You know, we just need to up it another 5 or 10%. That's really it, you know.
Yeah, and they're not lacking confidence, these young fellas, Coleman and Fitzgibbon and all these lads. Like, they're willing to try anything.
They come from great families. You know, Coleman comes from a great hurling family, and Blarney Fitzy comes from, you know, a great hurling family in Charleville. You know, Shane's family are steeped in Cork hurling. So, you know, all these people come from great hurling families. So they have humility and they have respect, and that's the kind of guys that they are. They're quiet, unassuming guys. You know, they love their hurling, they love Cork, and they love playing, you know, championship hurling and winning, and that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, no, and like they're down to earth fellas, but on the field, I'm talking about, they play with a great confidence, and I suppose that's the Cork way. Is that something that just naturally have?
Yeah, but you know, I landed in Cork, you know, a good few years ago when I went to UCC in college. They have that Cork, you know, sporting people have that swagger, have that slight touch of arrogance in that, and you know that they're the best, and that red and blood and bandages has been built on over the years. So it's great to see that within them, and you know, the support from the public was there yesterday. You know, in the four games, the Cork people have come out and supported their team, and I've no doubt that Thurles will be full in 2 weeks' time, you know, with a fierce sea of red as there was there last year.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to have to keep a good eye on Nash's balls in the net now before the next Munster final.
That's only Pish Rogue and the fellas trying to upset Nash. You're not going to upset Nash, that's one sure thing. And taking balls out of the, sure, you just get another peg and put it back in there, you know what I mean? That's stupid to me.
Well, that's it. But it kind of it added to the whole occasion nearly, didn't it? This kind of big drama and everything. I'm sure it'll be mentioned plenty in the lead up.
I don't deal in soap operas or drama. I deal in reality, and you know what I mean. If you want to upset me, you have to beat me. That's the only way you'll upset me. Do you know what I mean? But like, look, Nash's, look, sure, that was silly. Like, what they were at, you know what I mean? In the with the sitters in the net. But look, you know, we drive on.
Yeah, so it won't be mentioned as motivation for your team leading into.
No.
Okay, and what about?
I
go on.
I don't deal in those matters, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I could tell you stories down through the years of being involved in hurling where, you know, the only thing that matters is the result at the end of the day and getting there, that's it.
I think that the modern player now, John, you've come through a few different eras. They don't really respond to that kind of thing as much. They're more focused on the tactical side of the game rather than having to, you know, need something that was maybe said about the team or something like that.
Yeah, I think in the good old days where, you know, my time way back from the 80s on, and, you know, you had to bang a few hurlies in the dressing room and hit a few walls and slap a few fellas in the dressing room. That day is gone, really. Fellas are more mature, they're more educated, they're more, probably more intelligent, more wise, you know, and you can't just go back to the old days of swinging the hurley in the dressing room. Now it's more calculated, it's more discerning, it's more, you know, they want to know your tactics, they want to know how you're going to beat the opposition, they want to know things like that. So there's a lot of, I suppose, mentoring, there's a lot of teaching, there's a lot of coaching within it, and guys respond that way, and if that's what they want, then that's what they need, and that's what we'll give them.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll be expecting a shootout based on the game in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, which was a brilliant game. Like, I mean, there's not an awful lot between the teams. So, like, I mean, it'll be a fantastic game, I'm sure, and a high-scoring one.
Yeah, look, there has been 8 games in the Munster Championship and, you know, over 200,000 people at the 8 games. Like, so, you know, it has been a feast of hurling in the Munster Championship. There's nobody could say, you know, about the hurling, like the crowds that are at it, the excitement, the tension, the hurling, the skill, the quality of the hurling has been incredible, I think. And, you know, and people have voted for that really with their feet by going to the matches. Like, you had 14,500 there yesterday, and, you know, I mean, you'll have a full house now in Thurles in 2 weeks' time for the Clare match. So, you know, and people love to see fast, skillful hurling. So you'll see Tony Kelly, Galvin Reedy, John Conlon, Peter Duggan, these guys, they all can hurl. And, you know, Lahan, Hoggy, Pitsy and those, like, it's incredible. It's a shootout like in Thurles in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, well, listen, John, thanks very much for taking the call, and best of luck in the Munster final.
Yeah, thanks, Colin.
I'd never be allowed to go off an eight and have a shite like him and go off a slob or whatever. Like, I was always doing a bit.
All I remember is I thought I was going to get clobbered on the way in there. I threw the ball up in the air. I don't know, it was pure luck, no, in fairness. Pure luck. It's fucking bullshit, as you've seen yourselves.
Okay, lads, so both managers came out after the game, Gerry O'Connor and John Kiely, and they put it down to fatigue. This second half kind of collapsed pretty much from Limerick. So we'll talk a bit more about the first half when it was actually a competitive battle. And this, I don't know, lads, it was a very scrappy game from where I could see it. There was no huge flow to it. There was a lot of nerves, it seemed to be, out there. Two teams, as we all know each other so well from college. And it almost looked like both teams were cancelling each other out.
Yeah, it was underwhelming because there was such hype build up and the tickets sold out immediately and the place was buzzing before the game, you know. And, like, I suppose... the lads spoke about in the studio before the game saying they hope it doesn't get to the players and it's as good as we hope, and it wasn't, you know. And you've seen they were just looking nervous. It was very defensive. Teams looked like they didn't want to lose it rather than going out to win it. And like Cusack Park is a great place to play hurling, and it just looked bottled up and close and no one could get space. And it wasn't great, but Clare won't mind again. They didn't hurl great and came out with a win, so that's two in a row for them, and it's just going to build for confidence. Like, I think they're really growing in stature as the year's gone on.
Yeah, no, they seem to be. Like, I mean, it was defensive. You're right on that. Like, and it was more defensive. And from my point of view, they didn't say this on the Sunday game last night, but from me watching it, I thought that you could pick this up on the camera a lot. And we talked about it on Thursday, and we talked about it about Limerick a lot, and that's their half forward line: Morrissey, Grodd, Hegarty, and Hayes, and they dropped deep.
Yeah, yeah.
Clare half back line didn't follow them. Mm. Like, the Clare half back line waited till it goes long, and then they doubled back in and closed up the Limerick full forward line. So Clare went very conservative. You know, am I right in saying that they didn't really push up that high? Like, there wasn't that big space for Limerick than there was in other games.
Yeah, I think they held the half back line well, because I suppose Limerick or Clare's half forward line came in and met. Say Limerick's half forward line, so there was a big, there was probably 8 or 10 people in that
mash-up,
in the middle third there as well, which probably with the modern hurling, that's the majority of the time is there's loads of people around that middle third as well. But it's just been to be stopping, starting, and just tackles were the kind of, the referee was blowing a lot of the spare hand in tackling, like, you know, and just pulling, lads were pulling jerseys and pulling lads back, and the referee was very, very particular on what he pulled there as well. But no, it wasn't a good game to watch now, and I suppose we're like everyone else, we're sitting down, we're expecting this thriller there again, because the two teams have involved in thrillers against other teams, but then against teams like Cork that let you actually hurl, like, you know what I mean. But they were, the two teams nearly wanted to cancel each other out, and they're afraid to actually go win it, like, you know. And they probably knew, probably in the back of their own heads, they probably thought they might be playing in the Munster final again, but obviously it didn't work out that way. But it could have happened, very easily happened that way too, like, you know. So it's it was a thing that it kind of flattered, deceive a lot. And I'd say the hype coming up to them, the sellout in Cusack Park, and get to the players, and players will probably play for tickets now, and that kind of plays on players' minds really more than that, because when there's no talk about it, you can actually go out and hurl. But then when you know all your family is there and they're leaving that 10 o'clock in the morning for a match there that you usually leave at 12 or 1 o'clock, you know what I mean? So it's all kind of put a bit of pressure on the players themselves, and it showed, like, they weren't playing free. And it just, again, the second half kicked off, but there was no real fight in the second half, and was just clear, just kind of went out, won very, very comfortably, finished off the game. I think it'd have been around 9 or 10 points in the end. Like,
there
you
was
know,
11
so
in it at the end, 26-15. But look, I mean, you'd have to say Clare got the tactics bang on. Because, like, I mean, Limerick have been destroying teams, and we talk about Flanagan's movement to the wings, and McInerney was bloody marked Flanagan brilliantly, but he was being helped by the half back line that were coming back in and closing that space. And Limerick's game plan just didn't seem to function with Clare not being sucked out with their half forward line.
As a half back, you love nothing more than when the fellow American pushes up a little bit and he's not moving across that line. And I think that's John Coyley said after the match, it was just energy levels. Limerick didn't have it in the legs. I don't think the want was probably there, but they just didn't have it. They weren't running across the line. And as a half backer, this it's a dream situation, because when the ball goes over, you only have to run back and help your corner back, pick up the loose ball and clear it. And that's what happened again and again. McInerney was brilliant on
that was old school defending, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was like an old school game. There wasn't too much moving, and it just went man for man. And McInerney was brilliant, and Jack Brown was brilliant, and Graham Mulcahy. And I remember one stage in the first half, the ball went over the sideline and Flanagan went after it. Conor Cleary came in and gave him a dunt. McInerney came in and gave him a dunt. There was speaking beforehand, the lads were saying that Limerick were a bit more physical. I think like the Clare lads laid down a marker there and then, like, just saying we're not going to be pushed around here today. You wouldn't normally see it out of them. They're a bit more flashy than that, but they were in and hitting the Limerick lads whenever they got a chance.
Yeah.
And like, it just paid dividends towards the end, you know.
Yeah.
So.
No, it definitely did. So that's like, that's one kind of thing tactically that Clare did that I thought was smart, then cutting down the space completely. And the Limerick full forward line obviously scored, only Flanagan got a point. I think that was all from play, which is unbelievable considering the form they were in. And Gerry O'Connor said after the game, we didn't deviate from the game plan that we discussed at half time. Build the play, don't make heroes out of their half back line, don't bomb ball down on top of them, and we felt we'd get the opportunities that we did. So that's one thing, let your half back line hold their positions and let's not give them space, but also let's not make heroes out of their halfback line, which has been dominant as well in the year. So, like, I mean, Clare management deserve a lot of credit for how they approached this. It wasn't pretty, but, like, I mean, who gives a shit? You know?
And they were very good. Even short pokeouts were getting it, and then they were lamping over the Limerick halfback line. But they had John Conlon in there. He was concentrated for the whole game, even the first half. He was just so physically strong, and he's so quick as well this season as well. He must have done a lot of work over the winter for whatever particular reason, but he's so, so quick. And the Limerick full back then, they couldn't handle him. Even one lad was hanging out the full, my case was hanging over him, and then cornerback trying, he just pushes lads away, and he's hurling. Look, again, he's up there for player of the year so far, the way he is hurling, but it's great to have a target man in there when you know you're going long into full forward line, the ball's going to stick. It's not going to break out to your halfback, it's the Limerick halfback line. They get it up, and then it's back up the field again, like, you know what I mean? So once it goes in, it's sticking in there, and then Shane O'Donnell just some amount of work in there as well. He just hooks and flicks, and he just breaks your hands.
He's a great foil. But I don't think Shane O'Donnell can lead the line in there.
They tried that for the last few years, and it didn't work.
He's just not strong and powerful enough for that. But he's a great second man in
there. He just keeps the ball in there as well, like, you know. And then John Conlon is very good on the breaks as well, like, but right or left. But I think John is, after having a fabulous year so far as well.
Yeah.
He's just the perfect. I think we spoke earlier on what's the difference between this year and every other year. He was probably always out in the wing, and now he's centre forward, and now he's full forward. He's involved in the play all the time as well, in which a guy so strong and so quick has to be involved in the game all the time as well, like, you know. So
you look at them now and you see John Conlon flying it, Shane O'Donnell bringing out the best in himself without the pressure of having to lead the forward line. You have Duggan, who hadn't been on it, you know, only got on it late last year against Tip, and he's a leader out in the half forward line. Tony Kelly at centre forward. That's a serious forward line now. Whereas I was looking at it maybe in other years thinking, that's a little bit wishy washy.
Yeah, no, it's a serious forward line. Like, the three people who make them tick, I think, are like Colin Galvin is here. He came into the game so good yesterday. Tony Kelly and Podge, they're so good at coming deep, getting ball, and then their use of the ball is ridiculous. And then they have the workhorse like Shane O'Donnell and Reedy are in and around every break and buzzing around, and they just get the ball and do the simple thing, hand it off. They very rarely shoot, but the lads are thriving off them. So, like, the two lads do all the grafting, come out of the breaks and hand it off to Tony Kelly or Duggan, and it's over the bar straight away. And then Duggan's free taking is so good for Clare. They know it builds confidence for the team. Once they win a free, it's over the bar, and they don't have to worry about that aspect of the game.
Isn't it great to have? Because even Shane Dowling was dodgy on them yesterday.
Shane Dowling's technique just doesn't do it for me.
It's nearly too high risk. He throws it up too high, doesn't
he? Power over accuracy.
Yeah.
You see backs doing it from a long distance, or goalies coming out and running the ball. They lose accuracy all the time. Shane Dowling is a good free taker, but he
makes it hard on
him. He does, absolutely. You've seen it against when Pearshick against Coole in the last few minutes. He missed it. Shot from 45 yards a free. If they had a score, it probably would have won it all Ireland for them. I just think his stance and his technique doesn't pay dividends for accuracy in inter-county hurling.
I noticed that with him actually. He throws it up that high, JJ. Mm. It's unusual. They usually have more control over it.
He hits it kind of head high, shoulder high, like
Milan, like
when he's shooting at the goal. But again, you see Tony Kelly, he's told not to go into the tackle. I'd say he's always there for off the shoulder, you know, and that's his game. Once he breaks through the line, he's going to score. And he thundered into the game in the second half. He had a phenomenal game. But again, I'd say the target, Keane Lynch, in the middle of the field, anytime he got the ball in the first half, there was two or three guys around him straight away. And what Keane Lynch does more than anything is he delivers a quality ball into the full forward line. So that took away another out ball for that Limerick full forward line as well, because they just swarmed Keane Lynch anytime he got the ball. He was two or three lads hanging out and he got frustrated. He's very good at picking up ball in rucks like that, but there was just two or three lads stopping him, blocking him and driving him back as much as possible. Like, you know, he got a great point just before half time or like he got loose on, but he just wasn't loose enough. And he's the kind of foil between the backs and the forwards, because he delivers quality ball into that full forward.
Better ball in, the Werden gave him great ball in yesterday, Limerick at all. Dara Conan tweeted and he said, great performance from Clare, dominated from start to finish, fair play to Donal and Jerry. Clare have a great playing style of hurling again. So
They have two options. JJ touched on it, like they can go long to John and John Conlon, he's winning everything. Like, you know, if he's not winning it, he's breaking to Shane O'Donnell, or they can go through the channels, through the lines of Tony Kelly. And they haven't had them options over the years, because you had to give low ball into Shane O'Donnell if you wanted to win it. So like they have that game plan there and it suits, and teams don't know whether to follow Tony Kelly in that out and Colin Galvin, or do you want to stay back and protect your full back line, because if John Conlon gets his hand on the ball, you need two players there to stop him.
And Podge is getting out of there too.
Absolutely, Podge is just roaming around
and
that.
You have to follow him
exactly. So it's presenting problems for teams and managements, and Cork are going to have to look at it, like, did he put a man marker on Tony Kelly? Who's like, John Conlon got man of the match against them in the championship in the first game. I know they lost, but who's going to mark him? And do you have a fella sitting back there, so you have two people to stop him? So they're presenting problems for teams they're going to play, and there are a lot of problems because there's a lot of players and you haven't got that many man markers. So it's going to definitely be an interesting one to see what John Moyler comes up with against them.
It definitely is. Like, obviously Clare will have the same issues, we'll talk about that before the Munster final, having to decide what to do with their Cork forward line. But they have a style again, JJ, and Clare are a weird one in that I didn't believe in them really until yesterday, because they obviously lost the first game, did all right against Cork. Cork won at the end. Then we didn't see them hammering Waterford board for the disarray.
Then
we saw them be unimpressive for a lot of the game against Tip and snatch and grab. So like, I was like, Jesus, Clare doing well. You know, I hadn't bought into the Clare thing. I was thinking maybe, okay, the last few minutes against Tip, they just kind of caught them smash and grab. But like, I mean, Clare really do look like they're going places.
Yeah, I think so, because when their backs are going well and they're tight and they're up aggressive, I think their backs need to be a small bit more aggressive. The forwards will always score, and you never see Clare playing, they'll always have a high score, but they'll concede a high score there as well. Dave McNerney, that's his standard from now on. He shouldn't be dipping below that.
He's a great player, isn't he?
He's a phenomenal player when he does go, attacks the ball, but you're waiting for him to do that, I know he's injuries last year now, maybe he's just coming back and getting a bit of form there again, but he's a pivotal player for if Clare are going to go on to Wanton this year. They need him at that level, if not above that as well, because he just holds the whole thing around him as well. So again, they need to be more aggressive. Dave Fitzgerald came on there yesterday and scored a couple of points. He was impressive as well. He kind of probably, Shane O'Mori, very unlucky, got
very
a dead leg.
Flanagan did Maury there.
He
sidestepped towards him. He took him out.
Sore. But then man come on scoring 2 points, you know what I mean, with a point to prove as well. So they have settled probably 12 or 13 players, which is brilliant for the management team. There's 3 or 4 lads fighting to get back on there as well, so that's ideal for the management team to have them on, and they'll point them in the right direction now. And a couple of weeks to the Munster final here now. There is places up for grabs there again, like, you know, and Shane O'Mori will try and get back into that half back line. Will he get back in? It's hard to tell, like, you know.
They said that it was Gerry O'Connor again. He speaks really well. They're like, I mean, very honest, the two managers are, whenever they're interviewed. But he said that they've been trying to make Ennis a fortress, and they've definitely succeeded in that. But a consistent team in the last week and yesterday has been how they're trying to connect with the supporters. And by all accounts, Clare didn't even sell out their allocation to the Munster final last year. So they're like, I mean, it's almost like the Clare public didn't believe in this. So they're constantly ramming this home.
Yeah.
They were connecting with the supporters. The support was great. They kept talking about it after the tip win, the banner roar.
Yeah.
Great to hear that again. Whether they're hearing it or not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're putting that
out there.
To get the supporters.
Fits in
you know
them,
what
like,
they're
you
doing?
Know, they're
it's
building,
building
the hype
it up. And they're cleverly building it up. Yeah. And they're talking about the 16th man. I heard Podge Collins, he was on the Marty squad and I driving home from Roscommon yesterday, and he was talking about the crowd and how they banged the shed in Ennis and how that gets them going. And it's very obvious what they're doing, but they obviously felt they needed that because to get the public back on board with them.
See, after the one they learned there a few years ago, Clare Sports, right, this is great. This is a generation, golden generation, you know, we're going to win three or four in a row, or at least be competitive in three or four in a row. But the players kind of, in a certain extent, let the supporters down for three or four years in a row. I'd say the supporters were kind of saying, right, we don't know what's going to happen going to
lost
this game
patience.
Anymore. Did they? Yeah, because they're frustrated, I'd say, more than because they know how good they are. And then I'd say for the first time against Tipperary, you've seen the sports back out in the field again. Now, there were a phenomenal amount of sports out there because it showed how much you mean to them because they're back in, they're steady in the Munster Championship. And now I'd say they can gather momentum now, especially with the home game. And Munster Fine will tell a lot now if this Clare supporters are back because they are brilliant supporters. When they do get on the bandwagon, they will support 100%. But
yeah.
I think if they don't buy in with this team after the last couple of games, I don't think they'll ever do it, to be honest with you.
No, if you're coming out of a Munster league like that and winning three of the four, if you can't get on board then,
absolutely.
Well, I think the bandwagoners need a chat. No, but that's not good enough.
No,
I mean,
no,
what do they want in that case?
Like, I've seen firsthand down there in Cusack Park. 2012, Daler took us down for a do or die match against Clare, and he took us off the bus in Ennis, and we walked through Ennis, you know, and Daler was in front of us, and you just seen like how passionate the fans were, you know, and we sort of let Daler down that day. We were 5 points up in the second half.
You were favourites for that, weren't
you?
Yeah,
we were 5 points up in the second half. Clare were a man down, and I just seen the power. Like, they got one or two scores, and the crowd got behind them, and I seen how much it means to the Clare players because it lifted them, and they went on to win it by a few points. But it was firsthand, the first time I seen how passionate they were. Like, Daler would often speak about how good the supporters were, but I thought they were a bit fickle at times throughout the years. But when they're behind them, it's huge to the players, and you've seen that yesterday, and I've seen it in times past. They haven't had it for the last few years, but if they get it back, and the managers are trying to do it this year because they know how important it is, and if they have it, they definitely are all earned contenders. Like, you know.
What was that, just to pull you up on that, what was the psychology of walking you through Ennis? Like, I mean, I would have thought you should be avoiding these lads.
No, I think Dalo's thing was just defiancy, you know, like I like yous and the dub, and you know, and that's why
I'm walking through
he
your
loved
town.
Him so much, you know, like he was like, we didn't really know anything about it. We just parked over the bus and then get your gear out of the bus, we're walking. we were looking at each other, but like Daler with head down, shaping in the Dublin gear, you know, and like he was the best type of man he is. Like, he's just inspirational like that, you know. And unfortunately, we let him down big time that day, but it's just like, I think great managers get trying, like, you know, try gimmicks like that. They work sometimes, it didn't work on that day, but again, he just bought into everything about Dublin, and that's why I suppose we had the best spell we've ever had under him, you know.
Yeah.
So it's great at times, you know, but I've just seen it for the first time. It's a great atmosphere.
That was a good one. Cody would never drop you off in the square at Turles and tell you.
He'd leave you.
He wouldn't trust you to make it down to the Assembly Stadium.
Call
into Larry Carver's or something like that.
Jesus, lads. That's a good one, though. Like, I mean, I've literally never heard anything like that before, but that's maybe that psychology of, look, we're walking, we're coming to invade. It's almost primitive, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And Daler had the same aspect, like, of making Parnell Park a fortress, you know, and I think lads are trying to do the same. Emulate the same.
Yeah.
If you get that belief in the team, it works.
Yeah.
You
know, right. That's a good one. Finally, a word on Limerick, lads. Limerick for me have been the team of the Munster League, and now they're not in the Munster final. Like, I mean, I don't think they should lose heart, should they? Like, I mean, I think fatigue is like a lot of people say don't make excuses, but it's a genuine excuse because that's not Limerick in the second half that we know from this.
I wouldn't be too disappointed if they disappointed they didn't make the Munster final, but over the next couple of days you actually sit down and look back at the league they had. They had phenomenal performances, no doubt about that, and they're probably the form team and the most exciting team out of Munster, really, to be honest with you. But have the big say in where the All-Ireland's going to go? I have absolutely 100%. Will they win it? Maybe it might be a bit too soon, but you never know. If they get on a run, they might do it, but they will knock out a big team on the way to All-Ireland. They have a big say in where this goes as well. So it's again just to probably dust themselves down to realise where they are now at the moment. Maybe the hype down Limerick, did it do them any favours? I don't know, you know, in a kind of way, but maybe a loss like that might bring them back down to earth small, and then kick on again because they have a couple of weeks to get themselves right now and get the whatever injuries they had they were carrying into the game and get them right, come back out fighting again but the All-Ireland series is up for grabs now as well. So they're in that now. Their Munster Championship is over. That competition done, dusted. But they're into the All-Ireland competition now. So why, as a Limerick supporter, would you be? Yeah, you'd be hopeful going into the summer.
You'd be in great form. They play the Joe McDonagh Cup final, one of the two finalists now. So they're like, no disrespect, but that should see them back into the mix.
Yeah.
So
then they'll come out.
The analysis last night, they said
play the Leinster Losers, and I think
that's it. Yeah.
They said they hit a lot.
Yeah, you could be meeting them. Yeah, you probably will be meeting them. If favourites go, if games go like the bookies are saying, it would be Kilkenny versus Limerick. Which, and you just got over them last year, didn't you, in Nolan Park?
Yeah,
that was a good game.
Just only a couple of pints is all. Yeah. That was it.
Okay, so that'll be interesting. Right, listen lads, we'll leave it there and we'll be back with Paddy Power performance of the weekend.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up now, because there's no such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
Let Shamey talk at a Hurley launch one day.
Yeah, but hold on a second now. He was at a Hurley launch, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a media ban if he can't talk at that.
Absolutely not. I think you guys need to do your job. Don't depend on us guys for quotes. You know.
Okay.
Earn your living like the rest of us.
But if he's at a media day and he says to the media that I'm not allowed to talk, then he's obviously on a ban.
Well, I think he's carrying a mixed message.
All right. So Paddy Power performance of the weekend, and we have 5 nominations, maybe 6. Maybe 7, because we put the wrong poll up on Sports Joe. But anyways, so Tony Kelly is the first one. He's one of the nominations, lads, and he was outstanding in the second half when he needed to be. And his scoring returns for Clare off the charts. And like, I mean, there's not much more we can say, because Tony Kelly regularly gets into his performance the weekend. Yeah. And what do you say about him? He's just an unbelievable player, comes late on the play. He isn't picked up.
Yeah, he just
sticks it over the bar.
On the guy's shoulders all the time, because you know when they are bottled up, Shane O'Donnell and himself link up absolutely brilliantly. Even Tony would play the ball into him and he goes for the return pass. And when he knows he goes for a return pass, he's always going to get it off Shane there as well, which is a great thing to know. But phenomenal player again, and even right or left, and he's just a great, great hurler, like, you know. And he's stepping up to the mark, in fairness to me. Probably a couple of lads are accusing him the last couple of years of kind of when they want him, he's kind of disappearing. But against Tipperary, he missed a few wides, but he didn't go missing. He kept on shooting at the goal and he got a couple of points before half time. Again yesterday, 3 or 4 from play there, and again, phenomenal player. Like.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. We want to talk about Tommy Ryan here, lads, because, for a man who's played in the defence himself, I've played cornerback, JJ, you mightn't believe that, for league matches with Leash, and I've played wingback. And, I'd rather mark a lad that would hit 1-4 off me and be lazy than have to run around after Tommy Ryan. Even if he doesn't score off me. I'll take someone over Tommy Ryan any day.
You're a good team player, will you?
But Gooch could hit 1-4 off you and you might not break a sweat running around after him. He's just clever movement. Yeah. But Tommy Ryan would just have you running all over the bloody field.
I
compared a footballer to a hurler there, right?
And he never goes backwards. If he comes out and gets a ball, you'd be saying, oh, right, hand it off or hit it over your shoulder. It's turning straight at you, and he's so direct. You know, a few times yesterday he bounced the ball and he's still gone again, and relentless, and lads really struggle to catch him, and there's fast lads out there, you know.
On yesterday's performance, you wonder how he's not on the Waterford team more often. Mm-hmm. But maybe the stupid effort at a point where he telegraphed this at the end and got blocked down, that was stupid at that stage, because anyone could see, was it Cooper that blocked him down?
It was a great block. You know,
well, he had lost the run.
That was the winning of
the
game as well. And plus there was a Waterford lad 10 yards behind on his own.
Just in front, a quick hand pass.
But look, I think he played such a great game, and he's young and naive, he'll learn from it. He'll definitely learn from it, that in future he'll look up, because he was so smart, clever with the ball up to that point, you know.
Yeah,
it was a huge turning point in the game.
Oh, massive, because
they went straight up.
Patrick Horgan just couldn't believe his luck. Has a tap over that he didn't even have to work for, and with the wind just floats it over. That was heartbreaking. That was the end of it really for Waterford after all the hard work. Seamus Harnady was outstanding in this one, and Harnady is the type of forward that it's a great weapon to have, in that he could play anywhere across those six positions and he could do equally well. That's a huge kind of plus, and we know Conor Lehan is very flexible. Kingston is very flexible. You're not sure who's playing where against Cork, JJ, and it's hard to prepare, I'm sure. Managers will pretty much give you a detail on who you're marking, but it probably won't be that player that you're expecting unless you're going to play out of position yourself.
We were down watching the Cork Limerick game back down in Parky Cueve. It's actually interesting the way they set up. the two guys, Patrick Horgan is in one corner of the small square and Seamus Harney on the other corner of the small square, and Shane Kingston is right in the, at the 21 in between
on the
bottom,
top of the D,
in between the bottom. So what happens is loads of space. You ever see Cork scores for over the last few games, they're always there over the sideline, they're running out towards the sideline, getting the ball and turning back in, and Patrick Horgan is brilliant at it. Just leans back straight over the bar on the left hand side. They leave a load of space out in the corner because they know where the ball is going to come from. Mark Coleman and the guys, they just pop the ball in. They're not hitting it into someone in particular.
Yeah.
They're popping into space, and the lads are leaving themselves so much of space. It's actually literally, it's funny when the ball's the other end of the field, there's four of the guys and the goalkeeper inside the small square, because they leave themselves a massive amount of space there as well, because they know they back themselves to beat the guys out to the ball when it is, because they know where it's going to go. They're gone before the defender as well, so it's a great tactic from Cork as well. So it's something that Clare are going to have to look at the next day as well.
Yeah, well, I think, geez, we don't want to use up all our good stuff for the preview show, but like, I mean, that's similar to Limerick, and Clare had the answer for that with their half back line, so that's going to be another interesting one. I'll give Peter Duggan to you. Peter Duggan was very unlucky last week in that I had to teach him a bit of a lesson in that you have to throw it off.
Yeah.
He missed out on performance at the weekend here because he should have thrown it across the goals, and I know Peter's going to thank me in later years for overruling him on this, but listen, the way Peter Duggan is playing, he'll be definitely in the mix for performance of the weekend in the future.
Look, there's free takers on sides all around the country that are just there because they're great at frees. Like, he's a brilliant free taker, but he's so good from play as well. He throws himself about, he's a big lad, and he's so capable of taking a score on his own, you know. And like, he had some touch yesterday. I know it was a great save made, but a high ball came in and he just flicked it down to himself under a huge amount of pressure, and it was a great save from the keeper, but it just shows what he has in his locker. Like, he can score from distance, he's a grafter, he's unbelievable at frees. The goals will come because he's had quite a few goal chances in the last few games. He hasn't taken them, but they'll definitely come. And when he adds that into his games, he's going to be a very hard man to stop. Him and Coleman, it's going to be some battle now in a few weeks' time.
His confidence, really, with it, Peter Duggan, is it, JJ?
It is. But you're on the freeze and you're scoring the freeze as well, and the guys talking about him as well. And even against Tipperary, the point he got over the sideline was absolutely phenomenal. Like, you know what I mean? So he has the confidence and he has the ability to back himself with that as well. So I'd say game on game. That's sort of guys. It's funny we were talking about four games in a row, but I say for the likes of him, he would play every week during the summer now from now on, because he's just on a high note at the moment, and games can't come quick enough for him, you know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
So it's funny the way it works.
Exactly. John Conlon, we've talked about him a lot recently, lads, and we mentioned him there in part two. So he's another nomination. Podge Collins did well in the online poll, even though he wasn't going to be in my endless, but he's come second to Tony Kelly, actually, with 26%, and he's getting back into that kind of form, isn't he?
He didn't reach the standards of the week before, but Podge is so popular in Clare, like, so when he gets on the ball, everyone notices, and he's so good at using the ball as well. Like, he definitely didn't have as much influence, but he did some great things during the game. But the standout one for me is John. John Conlon, I think he was the standout player of all them. He's just, his game has improved so much. Like, he can be a bit tailored at wing forward, where lads could man mark him, and if he didn't win the first ball, there's too many people around him by that stage. But he's relishing that position in full forward. He's a big man, but he looks like he's trimmed down. Like JD said, he's looking a bit more mobile. When the ball breaks, he's on it quicker, and I just think that's a huge part of his game he's improved on. And there's not many fullbacks at the moment that could stop him.
No, and for a fella who's played a lot on wing forward, he's very good at tight angles from the full forward line, isn't he? Like, which is surprising if that's not what you've maybe grown up doing, like Patrick Horgan, for example. He's very good on tight angles, breaking out and putting them over the bar back across himself.
He is very, very accurate. I'd say he's very confident too. Like, you know what I mean? He will take the shot. If half chance at all, he'll take the shot rather than pass the ball as well. Like, which you want from your full forward as well. Like, you know, back yourself. You're in there for a reason. Especially if you're the main guy in there, you're the main scorer getter as well. So get the ball into his hand and he should be shooting it as much as you can, you know?
Yeah, okay, exactly. So, like, I mean, Tony Kelly won the online poll, but John Conlon wasn't in it. So we have a big decision here to make, lads. Very difficult. This is very difficult. You're maybe tipping me over the edge.
I think John
as well.
He's more
consistent the whole game. I'd say, like, even for the first half, he was
when they needed him.
Yeah, he was there fighting the cause for Clare there as well, and he was consistently. Mm. Maybe Tony was in sports, he was better, but I think John over the whole game, I thought he was better. To be honest,
he was drawing two men as well. So even if he wasn't scoring or getting on the ball, he was drawing two men away, and then the breaking ball was coming out, and lads were getting on it. So he just causes trouble in that football. full back.
Okay,
line.
So you've convinced me, lads. For the second week in a row, we're overruling democracy, and we're Tony Kelly. We're very sorry, even though Tony's a big friend of the show. Yeah. He's in our promo photos. Yeah, yeah. I don't know how I'm going to look at him in the eye again. But listen, John Conlon wins performance of the weekend. Congratulations to him, and we'll be in touch about giving you a pair of Paddy Power boxers. And that's all we've time for. So thanks, Paddy Power, for sponsoring the show. And we'll be back on Thursday. Oh, we won't be back on Thursday. We'll be back on Thursday week. There's no hurling next week, lads. We can all sit back and have a breather here. And I'll just have one 11 bloody football matches. Yeah. Right, okay. So we'll be back Thursday week with a preview show. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going. So it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I never see you later, but not a lot of time.